about vectors in Hilbert space, but the phase of the vector is irrelevant. So the ray is really the projector onto that vector. That's what's going to be important here. And so the first idea is that the rays of Hilbert space correspond one-to-one with the physical states of the system. So if I want to know what are all the possible physical states that a given system could be in, it's just the set of rays for the Hilbert space of that system. So I'll call that the representational completeness of psi, that there's nothing more to say about a system than what its quantum state is. The second postulate involves measurement. So the way you'll find it in most textbooks is that if the Hermitian operator A, with having spectral projectors pk, if that Hermitian operator is measured, then the probability of getting outcome k is just the expectation value of pk for your quantum state. It doesn't depend on what the eigenvalues. If I just ask about the probabilities of an outcome, it doesn't depend on the eigenvalues of A. It depends only on the projectors onto the eigenspaces. And here's the critical thing, that in the textbooks, you'll read that these probabilities are somehow objective probabilities, that they're not about one's ignorance, but they really signal a kind of objective indeterminism. So what that means is that if you looked at the past of that measurement event, imagine that you had a description of the physical states of everything in the past of that measurement event. The claim is that nothing would determine that outcome. Okay, so that's the sense in which it's objectively indeterministic. Nothing in the world fixes what that outcome is going to be. It's truly random. Okay, then we move to the postulate which concerns how isolated systems evolve. So this was a system that was being subjected to measurement. But if we talk about systems that are evolving and are, not interacting with other systems, so for example, just a freely moving body or a body in an external potential, then the evolution is given by a unitary operator. It takes the state vector to some unitary evolute of that state vector. And if you tell me what the Hamiltonian is, then I can express it this way. This is the amount of time that's elapsed. And the critical thing is that this is a deterministic evolution, right? So there's, unlike this case here, for a given initial state, the final state is fixed. And it's also continuous in the sense that if I take the time interval and the limit of the time interval goes to zero, this unitary becomes the identity operator. And so at very small times, the quantum state doesn't evolve at all. So in that sense, it's continuous. And that's what the evolution of isolated systems looks like. And then finally, let me mention the postulate that determines how systems evolve if they survive the measurement, right? So this was just about the relative likelihoods of the measurement having different outcomes. And some measurements, like a measurement of a photon, they destroy the system, right? If I capture a photon in a photodetector, that the photon doesn't survive the process. But other measurements, the system persists after the measurement's over. And you can ask, well, what's the appropriate quantum state to assign to the system if, for example, the measurement got outcome k? So this postulate answers that question. If the Hermitian operator A is measured and outcome k is obtained, then, first of all, the physical state of the system changes discontinuously. And it goes to the projection of the original state into the kth eigenspace of your Hermitian operator. So that's denoted by the spectral projector pk. So I project psi into that subspace, and then I just renormalize so that the final state also has norm one. Okay, so now the question is, and I'm gonna put it to you guys, what complaints might one have about this as an interpretation of quantum theory? So if I say, this is how we should make sense of quantum theory, is there any problem with that as you see it?
What about open systems? What about what exactly makes a measurement? All of that is like kind of wishy-washy there.
Okay, good. So
not really addressing that in those postulates.
Good. So let's take each of those in turn. So what about open system dynamics? So this is something you'll have seen in Joseph's course in quantum theory, that if I want to describe just some part of a composite system, I can use the reduced density operator to do that. And you can find that the evolution of those systems is given by these completely positive trace-preserving maps. And that's not something that you find in undergraduate textbooks typically, but it's definitely part of the standard formalism. So you're right that I could supplement these with those types of postulates that describe open system dynamics. But there was even if I replaced this with a postulate about open system dynamics, it would still look quite different from the kinds of dynamics I have under measurements, because it would still be true that it is a deterministic evolution in the sense that if you give me the original density operator, the final density operator is fixed, right? You tell me what the open system dynamics looks like. Here's my environment. This is its initial state. Here's the unitary coupling. That will fix exactly how the density operator of the system evolves. So there would still be this kind of contrast. Now, the second point you made was that something like, what is a measurement? Or how did you put it?
Like, how you can get evolution, continuous and deterministic evolution, and then something discontinuous happening with measurement somehow, mysteriously.
So let's go a bit deeper. What's problematic about that? Is it just that it's insufficiently well defined what a measurement is in these postulates? Is that?
I mean, it is kind of intuitive, but it's like, what if is in the measure, the observer also a quantum system, and blah blah blah, and how can it? And are in quantum systems supposed to evolve unitarily and all that? So how can that be suddenly be a discontinuous, non-unitary something happening in the measurement process?
So. There's definitely a kind of tension that there's these two types of processes. But are you saying that any theory that had two types of evolution processes would be kind of problematic? Or are you saying something more, that it's not just the existence of two types of evolution processes that's bothering you? It's like when you said, does an observer count? Is it that it's not clear what should count as a measurement? That's how you would say it? OK. Other complaints about this interpretation? Yes?
It's not really that important, but I've always found it strange why there's always an appeal to a Hermitian operator A, which is the measurement operator, because the eigenvalues, for example, are relevant to any sort of statistical prediction. And yep. Really, why is there ever a need to include eigenvalues of operators, for example, description of the measurement?
Right. So you could certainly complain about that as a kind of cosmetic feature of this way of presenting things. So suppose we redid it and fixed that and just said, look, a measurement is associated with a projective resolution of identities or a projective valued measure. So it's just a set of projectors that sum to identity. Similarly here, I could just specify the set of projectors, and then the taco formation operators would be gone. And yet, I think there's still, so that could sort of salvage this interpretation because it would just clean it up. But many people think that there's still more issues than that. But anyways, yes, I agree with you that is much like the failure to talk about how open system dynamics works is a kind of shortcoming of the old style way of doing this, which I think the new quantum information approach to quantum mechanics overcomes. I think the use of Hermitian operators is like that. And if you look at it in a textbook in quantum information, they won't talk about Hermitian operators so much. Other problems?
Never defined what a physical state was.
Never defined what a physical state was. Yep.
How are you supposed to interpret that? Like, if you do loads of measurements on two things and they're all the same, then is it the same state or not?
So my impression is that people are relying on that kind of classical notion of a physical state here. So we had a notion of a physical state in classical theories, like, say, Newtonian mechanics. In Newtonian mechanics, when people talked about what's the physical state of the system, it was kind of unambiguous what they meant. They meant, please specify its position and momentum, for example. or if it's a system that has a bigger phase space, just tell me exactly where it is in its phase space. That's its physical state. So I think what's being suggested here is that we should think of the quantum state as playing that role, the role of the physical, the same role that the phase space point played in a classical theory, as essentially a complete description of all the properties of the system. But there is a sort of possibility for confusion because in quantum theory, yeah, there's definitely many different notions of state bouncing around. So as you say, you know, a notion of state that you often hear about is what Schrodinger called a catalog of expectations. So Schrodinger was careful to say, well, we should think of the quantum state at a very minimum as just specifying, you know, if somebody tells me this is the measurement I'm doing on a system, then the quantum state specifies what the probability distribution over the outcomes are. So it tells you for every measurement you might do, here are the probabilities over the outcomes. And in that sense, it's a specification of the system. But that's a very different kind of notion of state from the classical notion of a description of all the state's properties. And I think there's a definite tension here in the sense that you know, maybe there's good evidence to say it has the role of a state in Schrodinger's sense. It certainly is a catalog of all expectations. But ought we to take that to mean that it's therefore like the classical notion of state, a complete description of all the properties of the system, right? Like it's you know, once you sort of realize that there's these two notions of states, you wonder, should we be equating them so quickly as the textbook interpretation asks us to do, to just think of it as a complete description of the system, as opposed to a complete description of what sorts of outcomes you should expect to see if you do measurements on that system. Other ideas for what's problematic here? Yeah.
I think in some sense it's like fails to be a physical theory from the outset because it doesn't specify what by which unitary evolution should occur. Like it seems like the quantum theory isn't putting any constraints other than it's some permission operator. And it doesn't give you any tools or techniques by which you figure out you can reverse engineer to figure out what the evolution
should be. Yep.
But it doesn't tell you, it doesn't predict really what that evolution should be unless you bring in some outside information.
Yeah, that's certainly true, that these postulates really don't tell you, I have a particular experimental setup in my lab, which unitary to use to represent that particular transformation. And typically you don't really find that in the textbooks, but it is something that's kind of there implicitly. So, you know, if you do quantum mechanics long enough, you kind of get a sense, or let's say you're doing quantum optics, you get a sense for how you should model. We know how to model different parts of our experiment, so we can kind of get a mapping between unitaries and things you do in the lab. And that's definitely not here. So perhaps it would be clearer if the postulates stated that something just like, whatever setup you have in the lab, there will be some unitary that represents it, and then there's some rules for figuring out, you know, what that unitary is. But you know, the key thing, the fundamental thing here, is just the claim that there is some unitary that represents it. And similarly over here, that if you give me a particular measurement device, it might not be trivial to figure out precisely which set of projectors represent it. But the claim is that there will be some set, and when you do that measurement and get outcome k, this is how the state will evolve relative to that set. So people, besides that, what we've heard, are you happy with this? Is it like a final interpretation of how to make sense of quantum mechanics?
I say no. Just because, I mean, the title of this slide is an interpretation of quantum theory. Mm-hmm. To me, I've always seen this quadruplet of statements as a set of tools by which you calculate probabilities. And I think that's fine. I think that's really all that you should be able to expect at a fundamental level, maybe. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really tell you about doesn't tell you about elements of reality or pieces by which, or mechanisms by which these probabilities show up. I mean, in the light of what I said in the past, it's like, if all you're doing to find these measurements, the things that represent the measurements and the things that represent the transformations and the things that represent the states, if the method by which you find those objects is just look at the probabilities and sort of reverse engineer how your observations could fit into quantum theory. And it's not, it doesn't really, it feels a bit bizarre in that way, because it's the theory isn't really telling you here's how the elements of the system behave in a sort of pictorial way, and then here's the properties that you're measuring. It doesn't tell you what those properties are. It just tells you these objects can accommodate your statistics, and you just go from there. It just seems like it's missing a piece.
So I think what you just said is perhaps best cast not as a criticism of this textbook interpretation, but what I'll suggest is kind of one response to some of the problems that are here, which is a purely operational approach, where you could say something like, look, it's just not appropriate to talk about a classical notion of state in a system, the idea that the quantum state describes all the physical properties of the system. That's where does that come from? Let's just say, no. If I have a preparation device in my lab, which prepares some system, so I've just done something, I may have turned on the laser, put it through a polarizer, that's a preparation procedure. And what a quantum state represents is a particular preparation procedure. And so we scratch physical state and we just say, look, every preparation procedure is associated with some ray in Hilbert space or some density operator. And here's how we represent measurements. And here's how we represent devices that transform the system. And so there's just no mention of systems and their physical properties. And all we're talking about is the stuff on the lab table and how to represent that. And ultimately, the quantum state does serve this sort of role as catalog of expectation. Just as you give me a sufficiently accurate description of what your experiment looks like, and the quantum formalism can tell you what the relative probabilities of different outcomes are, and that's all you should ask it to do. So then there isn't this sort of notion of a specification of physical properties. And then it seems to me what you're saying is that, but that seems a bit unsatisfying as an interpretation of the formalism. So by the end of this lecture, I hope we will get to the question of, in what ways might that be unsatisfying? But I think the textbooks are asking you to take the quantum formalism a bit more seriously than that. I mean, most textbooks, they're trying to say, don't just think of the quantum state as representing things you do in the lab. It really does describe all the properties of the system. And furthermore, don't think of these probabilities, for example, as just what you can infer about an outcome, given that you know what the preparation procedure was. No, you need to think of these probabilities as a fundamentally new kind of phenomena that wasn't there in classical theories, wherein all the past properties do not fix what's going to happen next. And they're going to say that's one of the conceptual innovations of quantum theory. So maybe if I can put words in your mouth, that it would have been better if it hadn't involved this hybrid of sort of realist concepts about properties of systems and whether the indeterminism is objective or not, and these operational notions like measurements and preparations, transformations, things like that. It would have been nice if it had been kind of just one of those two choices. There's something a little bit inelegant about having both sorts of notions here. Yeah, go ahead.
Just to expand a little bit about what Carlos said, what really bothers me about this is that I don't know what role I play in this quantum theory, because it seems like all those things are, okay, if I do this and I see this, this is happening, but surely I am also part of this. So how does this imply if someone is looking at me? And I always get confused about
where do I draw the line between this is my quantum system and I'm now the god of it, so I'm doing some things to it. And if I'm constantly watching it, like yesterday we talked about the quantum Zeno effect, so it seems like, okay, if I'm watching it, I can keep it there. And all these things seem a bit different from other formulation of physics where you just have a theory that is on its own, living there, and it's doing its thing, and you don't seem to be involved, whereas you're clearly involved in some way.
So is your discomfort with the idea that we should be involved at all? Like, it would be just nice if there's sort of no mention of what we are doing and a kind of a clean description of out there in space, if there's some systems, you know, here's what's going to happen to them. See, like, that's what we should hope for, a kind of non-anthropocentric presentation of the theory. No terms like measurement should appear, because that's, you know, very anthropocentric notion. Good, yeah, that's a worthwhile complaint. Anything else?
How do you like model observations, as in, say, put a small quantum system, put a larger quantum system, and make the larger quantum systems observe the smaller quantum system? Can you kind of get something like that through unitary operations?
So you're saying
it's approximately non-unitary, but how do you model kind of like measurement with just following unitary rules?
Good. So again, let me try to put some words in your mouth. Maybe this is what you're trying to say. Correct me if I'm wrong. But you could say, well, look, a measurement device is also a collection of atoms, right? Nothing special about a measurement device. So in particular, if I took the system of interest, like say it's a spin, and the measurement device, and anything else that's interacting with them, and I drew a circle around that and said, that's my isolated system now. So I consult the third postulate. It tells me that it should evolve unitarily. And yet the second postulate seems to say, you know, what should happen in that context. And the third postulate also tells me what happens. And so is it the case that the second postulate can somehow be derived from the third postulate and is therefore supplementary, like it's just, you don't need it. Superfluous is the word I'm looking for. Or could it be that maybe they're actually in conflict, which would be a bigger problem, because I can choose to model the measurement this way if I want. So maybe that's your question, which is, can I derive the measurement postulate from the postulate for the evolution of isolated systems? So what do you guys think? Is it more likely that this thing is superfluous and it can be derived from this, or is it more likely that they're in conflict with one another? What's your feeling? Conflict? What? Okay. What gives you that sense that they're in conflict?
One of them says indeterminism. One of them is deterministic.
Excellent. Well spotted. Yes. good. So here's one way to think about it. Suppose I have a composite system, and it's evolving unitarily. Okay. So that says, whatever the physical state of the composite system is. Determinism tells me that the final physical state of that composite system is fixed. It's unique. There's no concerning about it. Now, that physical state of the composite system defines a unique physical state for the component, right? And if the physical state of the composite evolves to a unique final state, well, then the physical state of the component is going to be unique as well. So the physical state of the component under the deterministic evolution of the whole is also going to undergo a deterministic evolution. So how could it possibly be undergoing an indeterministic evolution, as this postulate says, if everything is evolving unitarily? Good. Is there any other, there's one other kind of word recognition conflict? Yes?
Like similar with the discontinuity of the reactions?
Well spotted, yes. it's exactly right, that it's the same sort of argument, that if the composite is evolving continuously, that means that at very short times it's not evolving at all. Well, the same can be said of any component of it. So how can a component evolve discontinuously under measurement? That seems to conflict with the idea that I could model that composite of system and measurement in a unitary way. Okay, so let's go over what the problem is. So the this is just a review of some of the things we covered. So the first kind of problem you might identify, which we did, was that this term measurement is not really defined in terms of these more primitive notions of physical states of systems. So here we mean this classical notion of a complete description of all its properties. But isn't a measurement just another kind of physical system which is interacting with your system of interest? So presumably the notion of a physical state should apply to it as well. So it kind of feels inappropriate to have it there in the axioms. So that leads you to ask the question, could you possibly eliminate this notion of measurement as a primitive concept and instead just describe everything in the way that we were talking about? Like it's just sitting out in space and it has its physical states and we're describing how it evolves and we don't have to have any anthropocentric concepts in there at all. And so this, you know, many people who have worked on the foundations of quantum theory have strived for doing so. So John Bell is a famous example. So he complained a lot about this notion that quantum theory is really about just providing a catalog of expectations for the results of measurements. And you know, in particular, he was bothered by the fact that the postulates didn't have any specification of what qualifies some physical system to play the role of measurer and induce collapses and discontinuous indeterministic evolutions. Okay, but here's the, I would say, the main problem that we uncovered, which is this inconsistency in those textbook postulates. So we talked a bit about these different ways you might choose to represent an experiment. So I've drawn here a simple experiment. It's a Stern-Gerlach experiment where you have, you know, a source. It spits out, let's say, a neutral silver atom, I think was the original setup. It has some spin. You put it through an inhomogeneous magnetic field, and that causes it to evolve upwards or downwards depending on its spin along the axis of this magnet. So if this is the z-axis, this is a measurement of z-spin. So on the one hand, I could think of that entire apparatus as a kind of measurement on the spin system, and then use the what's called the collapse postulate, the measurement postulate. And then I say, okay, well, the spin system is evolving indeterministically and discontinuously. So by the way, here I'm imagining that although I've kind of drawn a screen here, which looks like it's going to destroy the spin, I really mean one that allows the spin to survive so that it makes sense to talk about what the state of the spin is after the measurement's complete. So you might want to, for example, do the measurement of whether it went up or down by shining light on it so that the spin is preserved. Okay, so on the one hand, if you apply the collapse postulate, this is what you see. But if instead you say, no, I'm going to treat the entire rest of the device, like in particular the atoms in the screen, as other quantum systems and assign a quantum state to all of those, then I apply the unitary evolution postulate, which seems to suggest that the evolution of the entire composite is deterministic and continuous, and therefore that the evolution for the state of any subsystem is deterministic and continuous, and so you have your contradiction. So one comment here is that previously in physics, I would say that this decision about where to put the cut, what you're going to treat as a dynamical degree of freedom, and what you're going to treat as something that's maybe an external potential or just, you know, something that's not going to be dynamically evolving, that was really just a choice of the physicist. You know, you might say, well, I think it's a good approximation to say that the difference in masses of these two things is sufficient that I can treat this mass as just, you know, an external potential because it's not going to suffer much back action, and I'll do the problem, and it should be fine. And so it seems to me that, you know, this cut shouldn't be something fundamental. It should really be up to you, and you should be able to describe the same experiment in either of these pictures, if the approximations are good ones. And so it seems unsatisfactory to say, oh, well, one of them's right and the other one's wrong, that, you know, this is the right place to put the cut. Because most people do not believe that there's anything special about the measurement device. It's just another collection of atoms. And we should be able to decide what we're going to treat dynamically and assign a Hilbert space. And we should get consistency no matter where we put that cut. OK. So yeah, that's a big problem with the textbook interpretation. But there's a second problem, which sometimes is described this way, that if you describe the system by the collapse postulate, then you find that it has determinate properties. I'm going to say what that means in a second. Whereas if you describe that same system as a component of a larger system that's evolving unitary, then you find that it does not have determinate properties. But let me tell you exactly what I mean by that. So I'm going to do a model of this simple problem. And what I'm about to tell you is often goes by the name of the quantum measurement problem. So the term, like many terms, is used differently by different people. So sometimes they just mean this sort of generic problem that the term measurement was not defined in the postulates. But here I mean something more specific, this contrast between determinate properties under the collapse postulate and indeterminate properties under unitary evolution. So suppose you treat the apparatus externally, and so you just treat the system as dynamical. And suppose you set it up so that its initial state of spin is a coherent superposition of up and down along the z-axis with some non-zero components, A and B. Then the collapse postulate tells you to expect that you're going to find the up outcome of this measurement with probability A squared. And at the end of it, you're going to have prepared the spin in the up state. And similarly with down. OK, but now if you do an analysis wherein the measurement device is treated dynamically, assigned a Hilbert space, then that first postulate, remember the representational completeness of the quantum state, tells you that even though it may be very difficult to figure out what the quantum state of this large body is, there is such a thing. Somewhere in the Hilbert space of that system, there's a quantum state that describes it fully. That's the first postulate. Okay, so I'm just going to write that as the ready state. So when this screen, for example, is primed and ready to detect, it's in some state. And according to the first postulate, that's some quantum state. So I'll just write it this way. The second thing is that if it's functioning properly, right, so there's going to be an interaction between the spin and the device. And if it's functioning properly, then when the spin is prepared up, the unitary evolution that couples the spin to the detector should leave the detector in some state that registers that it was spin up, right? That's why we call this a measurement of Z spin. If it didn't register that it was spin up or spin down when it's spin down, we wouldn't call it such a measurement device. So again, this can be very complicated to specify because it's a large system. But the first postulate claims that there does exist a vector somewhere in Hilbert space that's going to describe that state of your device. So I'm just going to write that as the up state of the device. Some complicated thing. Okay, so these two facts just follow from the hypothesis that this measures Z-spin and the fact that first postulate that everything about a physical system is described by its quantum state. And now I can derive what will happen if I feed in a coherent superposition of the up and down operators. So the key thing in this proof, the only thing that's really important, is the fact that unitary evolution is linear evolution. That means that if I have a superposition of two orthogonal vectors, two vectors, any vectors, and I act U on that superposition, I can distribute the unitary over those two terms. That's the linearity of unitary evolution. So another way to put it is that the unitary evolute of this state is the sum with these coefficients of the unitary evolutes of each of the individual states. So if we prepare the spin originally in the superposition of up and down, we start off our apparatus in this ready state. So here I've just distributed the ready state over the two terms of that superposition, and now use the unitarity, the linearity of U, and apply each of these equations, right? So this term here under the unitary evolution takes me to this. This term takes me to that. So I'm left with this entangled state here. Okay, and so now, you know, Schrodinger noticed this and said it would seem that, you know, you have a spin up and a spin down state sort of smeared. It's smeared between these two possibilities. So let's be a bit clearer on that. In what sense might I say that this does not have a determinate property of spin? Well, one claim that's been made in textbook interpretations and elsewhere is that the times at which it's appropriate to say that a certain property obtains is when the state of the system is an eigenstate of the operator associated to that property. So you might say, look, if you want to say that the spin z is a property of your system, well, that will happen only if the state of your system is an eigenstate of spin z. And so in particular, if I want to know a spin that's in an entangled state, does this entangled state have z spin as a determinate property, I just take this operator, which says z spin for the first system And the identity just is a way of sort of rewriting the Z-spin operator on the larger Hilbert space. It's just asking, you know, just trivial properties for the second system, the apparatus. And I just ask, is this an eigenstate of Z-spin? And you can easily work it out. You apply the Z-spin operator, and for the first term, you're going to pull out a plus one, and the second term, you'll pull out a minus one, and that is not proportional to your original state because it differs by a sign, so it's not an eigenstate. So you can say, aha, this entangled state does not have Z-spin as a determinate property in this sense. but also, just more intuitively, it doesn't look like it has Z-spin as a determinate property, given that you have these two terms here. Also, if you ask, does the apparatus have the determinate property of actually indicating that the spin was up or actually indicating that the spin was down, the answer also comes back no. I can define an observable that has these kinds of states as eigenstates, and this entangled state is not an eigenstate of that observable. So I have to say, no, the apparatus doesn't have the determinate property of indicating up or down. So not only do we have this conflict between, you know, what the collapse postulate and the unitary evolution postulate says about the properties of the system, we also have a conflict about what it says about the properties of the apparatus, right? Under the collapse evolution, the apparatus ends up, you know, giving you a definite result. And under the unitary evolution postulate, no, it just ends up in this sort of strange smeared between two possibilities type of state. And then you may have heard of this little thought experiment. For the purposes of this argument we've just given, this is just a dramatization of the fact that the apparatus doesn't have a definite property of indicating one or another outcome. But you just, you know, you do in the original example, it was a radioactive decay. But here we can just say, look, suppose that we trigger this hammer on the outcome of the spin measurement, and then, you know, the cat lives if it was spin up, and the cat dies if it was spin down. And now the cat goes into the entangled state, and we have to admit that the cat is not in an eigenstate of any observable that indicates alive or dead, so it's smeared out between the two. And the idea, the reason Schrödinger gave this example was not to point out the inconsistency we were just been talking about, but rather to say that whereas you might have been comfortable with the notion of indeterminate properties for microscopic systems, so you might have said, well, I didn't really have any prior intuitions about whether a microscopic particle should always have definite Z-spin. So when you tell me sometimes it doesn't, maybe I'm okay with that. But the idea that, you know, apparatuses do not have definite properties of indicating one outcome or another, and cats do not have definite properties of being alive or dead, that seems, you know, as Schrödinger would say, to be in conflict with what we observe, right? That we don't go through the world observing macroscopic systems to have strange indeterminate properties, and therefore that's a problem with the unitary evolution postulate. Okay. Yes. Go ahead.
Ein selection. What about it?
Okay. Let's talk about. So that Ein selection is a term introduced by Wojciech Żurek to talk about the potential role of decoherence in solving these sorts of problems. Let me talk about the decoherence strategy more generally. So suppose I started out here with another degree of freedom, which would be the environment of the apparatus. So for example, you know, there's some air molecules in the room that might bounce off this thing and carry away information about which outcome you got. There might also be some photons that carry away information. So there's this environment that can become entangled as well. So if I start out with the environment in a ready state, and if it turns out that the environment couples to the apparatus in a way that it goes into different states depending on the state of the apparatus, then here at the end, because of linearity, I'm just going to have another term in my entangled state, which is going to be the environment responding to the apparatus having been up and the environment responding to the apparatus having been down. Although in the early days, people did propose that this might somehow solve the problem, I think it was quickly realized that it doesn't really help in the sense that now I just need to say, let's apply the unitary evolution postulate to the composite that includes the environment. I just get this big entangled state, and it's still the case that this system, every subsystem is evolving deterministically and continuously, which seems to be in conflict with the collapse postulate, and it's still the case that the apparatus doesn't have definite properties. So there isn't really a way out of the measurement problem here. Although decoherence is going to come up in many of the solutions that we're going to talk about to the measurement problem. Decoherence is going to be an important element of those solutions. So keep it in mind. But I just wanted to mention that environmental decoherence does not by itself change the status of this inconsistency in the textbook interpretation. Okay, so now I want to do the same thing we did earlier. I want you to tell me what are the ways out of this problem. So this is not just we're uncomfortable with the textbook interpretation. This is a real logical inconsistency. So the textbook interpretation is not viable. And the question is, well, how are we going to break the logical inconsistency? What options do we have? So maybe I should show you those axioms again. And then we can talk about which ones maybe have to go. Here they are. Or maybe it's not a particular axiom that has to go, but what ideas do you have for getting an interpretation of quantum theory that's at least logically consistent?
So are we looking to throw away axioms, or are we looking to try to apply the axioms anyway?
Well, I hope to have persuaded you by now that if you take all of this on board, you end up in a logical contradiction. If you want, we can still talk about that, but that's where I take us to be right now, that we have a logical contradiction, so we can't hold all these axioms at the same time, and therefore this interpretation won't work. And the question is, what is the menu of possibilities for where to go next? Like, what could we do to solve this inconsistency? And I have a slide which has sort of all the popular options for what to do next, and part of the next week we're going to be talking about a little bit about each of those options and what they entail.
Okay, in keeping my axioms, I would like just apply the measurement now on the entangled observation device system.
Yep.
And see what happens.
So if you say, well, let's just apply the Katz-Klapp's postulate here. So then what you're doing is you're saying, okay, well, there's another device on the outside which is measuring this, right? And we're applying the Klapp's postulate to that measurement. So what am I going to do? I'm going to say, oh, well, I'm going to just take that device. Do you deny that it is also made of atoms? If you say, no, I do not deny that, I say, fine, I can draw the circle around it, and it just goes into the entangled state, and we're not any further. Now, one option that people have talked about, and it's not a popular option, is to say something like, human consciousness is different, and it induces collapses, and it's special, and that's not going to be covered in this course because I don't think there's not much to say about it, and not many people think it's a very worthwhile idea. So it's not one of the items on the menu I'm looking for, but it is something that people have considered, that maybe at some point on this line there is a kind of measurement device that's special, like human consciousness or something like that. Other ideas? Let me go back to the, oh, there we are.
Can we forget about the idea of measurement all along and then just continue doing evolution deterministically and continuously?
You certainly could. I mean, you would certainly resolve the inconsistency if you said, let's get rid of this axiom, let's get rid of this axiom. So now we have everything evolves always deterministically, continuously, no logical inconsistencies. And then the question becomes, how do you recover the fact that we see that measurement devices do report individual outcomes? But there is a very popular approach that takes this route. So there is an answer to the question I just gave. There is a sort of idea for how you could possibly get rid of these guys and only keep the deterministic continuous evolution. Anyone want to guess what that approach is? Yeah.
Could you evolve it in a way that it becomes one state?
Well, so I think you're suggesting that maybe this is the axiom we have to give up. Like, we already know that if you hold on to this axiom, you're going to get these entangled states, right? All we needed was the linearity of unitary evolution. But if you said, well, maybe that's wrong. Maybe unitary evolution is not fundamental. Maybe, in fact, the fundamental evolution is nonlinear, and it only looks linear for microscopic systems, but somehow, when we get to macroscopic systems, its true nonlinearity reveals itself. or its true indeterminism reveals itself. Maybe it's still linear, but it's indeterministic. So it's just that you have to deny that it's both linear and deterministic. So it could be nonlinear, it could be indeterministic, it could be both nonlinear and indeterministic. Yeah, that is another option, to say unitary evolution is not fundamental.
And the problem we looked at, can we not just like say at some point we have to trace over an auxiliary system and collapse our state?
Well, good question.
That's you like have to only measure part of it and the other system has to be traced over?
Yeah, so suppose we did the case where we included the environment, we got an entangled state that had an extra term here and an extra term here, which would be like E naught and E one for the two states of the environment. And then suppose we said, now let's just describe the system and apparatus alone. So we calculate the reduced density operator. If that E naught and E one were close to orthogonal, I would get a density operator that was just a mixture with probability A squared of this, probability B squared of this. Now, the question we haven't discussed in this lecture is, you know, how should we interpret a mixture like that, right? We've been talking all about this representational completeness axiom, you know, told us something about how we should interpret pure states. But here's what I want to suggest, that it's tempting, and many people have succumbed to this temptation, to say that once you've got that mixed state, we should say, well, it's either this or it's this, with probabilities A squared and B squared, right? Like, let me draw it, just so we know what we're talking about. Like, once you've got that the reduced density operator for the spin and apparatus is this one, you might say, okay, so, and now we should interpret this as it's either one of the two possibilities. It's not somehow mixed between the two. And so what I would suggest is that the problem with that is that if you're really serious in saying, okay, it's not some sort of mixed, it's really one of the two, then you'd have to grant that when I look at the composite of all three systems, spin, apparatus, environment, then the reduction on the spin and the apparatus would be just this or just this. So if I ask, you know, what kinds of states, so if I write system apparatus, what sorts of states of system apparatus and environment are such that when I look at just the system and the apparatus, they have this state? And the answer is only product states. So only states where the environment is, let me just write it as doing its own thing, some state for the environment. Only these states have this kind of pure state on the system and apparatus. Any state that's entangled with the environment necessarily involves some mixture of different terms. So if one wants to say that it's really this or that, then you're claiming that the full state of system, apparatus, environment is really something like this, not the big entangled state. And so you could do that, but you can't do that without denying the representational completeness of the quantum state. So if somebody says, look, the full quantum state that involves the environment terms describes everything there is, then it's not possible that there's some deeper state that gives you more information about the properties, some deeper state that says, no, really, it's up. Because, I mean, without denying that first postulate. So in other words, one way out of this problem is to deny the first postulate and say the claim that the quantum state describes everything there is to know about the system is mistaken. And perhaps what we really need is some specification, you know, when I have that big entangled state, of what's really going on, that there's sort of a deeper state, a more descriptive physical state that tells me what's really happening that's not the quantum state.
If very good is already an environment and then tracing it out, like, shouldn't we just like say that the entangled state of A up and all that is like somehow fragile to the action of the environment, and then that would basically go all along the way of, you know, ion selection and decoherence? Isn't the entangled state somehow fragile to the action of the environment? Like when you trace out the environment, you somehow end up with something like it's not precisely entangled, but it's somehow either
see,
A or B.
What I want to say is as long as you continue to believe that at the level of the system that incorporates the environment, a pure state still is a complete description of the reality, the physical state of that guy, then that completely blocks you from saying anything more about the reduced state on system and apparatus than here's its reduced density operator. Because anything more you want to say, like, oh, it's really this term, would contradict the claim that you had described the composite completely. So when people pursue the idea of decoherence as a way of solving the measurement problem, they give up that first axiom. So they're really pursuing hidden variable interpretations, where they say, no, the quantum state doesn't describe everything. There's some extra information which picks out one of these terms and tells me what's really occurred. And some of those approaches say, and decoherence plays an important role in telling me, for example, what basis it's called the preferred basis problem. In what basis I get that further specification of information. So, you know, the fact that it's going to be the extra information is going to tell me that it's either this term or this term. There are other ways I could have decomposed this vector into a sum of terms. And so you need to kind of specify what basis that extra information picks out. So I think we may have covered all the options. Nobody had anything else they wanted to add, I presume. If not, I'll just go to that slide, which has all the options. Yeah, here they are. So let's actually, this option we heard early on from TC. So you could say the problem, and no, but he wasn't saying let's go for this option. He was misinterpreting the textbook interpretation as the interpretation that arises if you do this. But many people have seen fit to say, well, this whole idea that we should be able to describe the physical properties of systems, you know, independently of what we're doing to them, you know, that idea is mistaken. It kind of worked for classical physics, but now with quantum mechanics, we really see how mistaken it was. All we should really expect of a physical theory is some mathematical formalism that allows us to predict the outcomes of experiments. Like, that's what a physical theory is. That's all you should ask for. And so the problem with the textbook axioms was that they incorporated these notions of physical states. Let's just eliminate those. Let's talk about preparations, measurements, transformations, give a totally operational account of the predictions of quantum theory. And then you're good, because you're not making claims about how systems evolve anymore. You're just answering questions about what should I expect to see in this experiment. And no matter where you put the cut, your predictions about what you're going to see is going to be the same. So that's a viable option that many people take. They just say, let's not hope for the kind of realism that we had in previous theories. You could also deny the universality of unitary dynamics, by which I mean deny that unitary dynamics is the fundamental dynamics that describes all systems. So maybe it's a good approximation for certain kinds of very small systems, but it doesn't describe all systems, in particular large systems that make up apparatuses. And this sort of approach usually goes by the name of dynamical collapse theories. So in these sorts of approaches, that collapse postulate that we saw comes out, you can derive it from the fundamental dynamics at the level of the composite. So we saw an inconsistency between presuming unitary dynamics for the composite and collapse dynamics for the subsystem. But in these sorts of approaches, the dynamics for the composite system actually does allow you to derive the collapse postulate. But it presumes a failure of either linearity or determinism. So it's not unitary dynamics. It's a non-unitary modification of quantum theory, and it makes different predictions from quantum theory. The third option is to deny that the quantum state is a complete representation of reality. So one way of doing that is to say, is what are called hidden variable models. So these are, in some respect, classical-like models of what's going on. But most importantly, they just say there's some extra information that needs to be specified, and it's that extra information that leads to the fact that apparatuses do indicate particular outcomes. And then maybe we'll talk a little bit about whether you could somehow deny that the quantum state is a complete representation without really proposing a hidden variable model per se, because, as we're going to see, there's if you have a certain notion of classical hidden variable in mind, there's going to be limitations. There's going to be principles like locality that these sorts of hidden variable models will not be able to satisfy. I should say right now that these principles of locality are going to be violated regardless of what approach you take. Typically, like, you know, they'll be violated in dynamical collapse theories as well. But in any case, they're certainly one of the reasons that people have not been enthusiastic traditionally about hidden variable theories. Okay, and then finally, this came up. I can't remember who brought it up, but could we just drop the collapse postulate and the postulate about how systems evolve under measurement? So say there is no indeterminism in discontinuity. It's all deterministic continuous. And then the question is, well, how do we recover what we see? And this is the many worlds interpretation, also known as Everett's relative state interpretation. And the idea is, well, we'll see later, but the indeterminism and discontinuity are just going to be illusions. They're going to be, we kind of only see one branch of the universal wave function, so things look discontinuous and indeterministic to us. But fundamentally, the universal wave function is doing its thing. It's evolving deterministic and continuously, and Schrodinger's equation is right about it. And so there's no conflict. It's just that, some of the postulates were talking about what happens objectively. Other postulates were talking about what people see subjectively from sort of living inside the universe, and there's no inconsistency between them.
So this will be like me being the big mean analog to the machine, seeing the spin up, but I know that I'm entangled also with the version of me that is saying spin down.
So if you believe this, then you have to say, there's a parallel version of me who, for this very Stern-Gerlach experiment, saw the opposite outcome, and they're living in a parallel universe, and that's the reality. So you have to acknowledge that there's nothing special about you. There's all these parallel versions of you that really exist. And so we're going to talk about that interpretation as well. So I think that's it. Just one last note, which is, this lecture we were talking about the textbook interpretation, but logical consistency is a pretty low bar, and so for the rest of the course, we're going to talk about other desiderata that you might want a good interpretation of quantum theory to satisfy. Okay, see you tomorrow.